we've got a very important conversation to have in health and wellness today. And it's one that was inspired, in fact, by a listener who mailed me last month saying, please, can you help raise awareness of pelvic organ prolapse? She had undergone two surgeries to correct the condition in the past year. And she said to me, I have been struck over and over again by how little women know about this. Even friends, even those who've got a family history of prolapse, didn't know what it was, don't understand what I've been going through. And she said to me, please, can you get a medical professional onto the show and help do some education around this? And I'm very happy to oblige today and delighted to welcome back to studio Dr. Katrine De Haak, who is a gynecologist specializing in vulvovaginal diseases, who's been on the show before. And we know she's always an absolute straight talker and very passionate about getting women to talk about these things that were once taboo. So it's great to have you back to carry on doing that, Katrine. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Pippa. Happy to be here.
Thank you. I want to actually just share a direct quote from what that listener told me. She said, I knew a little about prolapses because my late mother had experienced something, but I was not aware of the details. So many women have asked me, how did you know something was going on? For me, it was because various organs started to protrude from my vagina. Scary stuff. Scary stuff indeed if you had no idea that this could happen. And Katrine, the fact that somebody whose own mother suffered from it still didn't know much about it speaks to the fact that it would have been taboo to talk about it once upon a time. Why is it still taboo in 2024? Why don't we have more conversations about this?
Oh, I think that in general, the vulvovaginal organs are taboo still. I mean, it's not something you talk over tea. And in the olden days, certainly, there were a lot of taboos. But in terms of organ prolapse, so it's actually vaginal prolapse. So it's not your organs that are actually prolapsing. The vagina leads the prolapse.
Right.
You know what? People normally know when they have prolapse, but I suppose they don't know they can get help for it. And prolapse comes in different ways, like a little bit of leaking urine, sometimes having to help pressure into the vagina to be able to poo or defecate, as we would say. And those kind of things are, you know, if something obviously is prolapsing, people run to the doctor. But those other things like, you know, a bit of incontinence or a bit of help needed, and they don't realize that it's prolapse, actually, that something can be done to increase quality of life.
Which is the main reason for doing this interview today, to let women know that there is help out there. So let's start with, I think, a very important question of explaining a little bit more about what this is. It's to do with the muscles of the pelvic floor, I think, broadly. Tell us more.
Yeah, so prolapse is basically when the levator ana, that's like a pelvic floor. It's like an upside-down umbrella, and it holds everything in. And if the umbrella goes inside out, which it often does in Cape Town, so then things start falling out. And it's basically the support of the muscle, the support of the ligaments, that then, with any pressure, like coughing or pushing down or even carrying heavy things, that things can start giving. All right, and how does it give? You can have the front part or the anterior part of the vagina actually bulging out. You can have the back part of the vagina bulging out. Or you can start presenting with stuff like if you cough, laugh, or sneeze, you wee. Or you let out a little bit of wee. You don't completely wee because the bigger muscle then stops you from completely weeing. Or, as I said, you need some help to actually poo because things prolapse and then the fecal material goes and sits in that prolapse and doesn't come out.
And can't go anywhere.
Yes.
And I would imagine with that in particular, there must be a risk of infection and all kinds of follow-up.
No, constipation. Constipation, bad problem. And so basically those organs then sort of slowly but surely prolapse. And often a question we get as gynecologists is, you know, is this going to get worse? It does not necessarily always get worse. It sometimes gets to a stage and then it stays at that stage. And in terms of what one does about it is that all depends on how much it worries the woman.
We're going to talk in a moment about the treatment options because it's a very important part of the conversation. But first, let's talk about what causes it. Why does this happen? What causes the pelvic floor muscles to collapse? Yeah.
So there are various things. Genetic, weak tissue. So if somebody's mother or grandmother or sisters have had prolapse, you may have genetic weak tissues. But of course, I think the biggest culprit is childbirth. Mm-hmm. And so the more children one has pushed out, and certainly the heavier they have been, the more tearing and damage there has been done to the pelvic floor. And then the next step comes is when the estrogen disappears, menopause.
Yeah.
So then that's when usually the prolapse then presents, because the estrogen also strengthens the vaginal walls and the ligaments and muscles. But when that disappears, then the prolapse presents. And you also can get it in people who have chronic bronchitis problems, chronic diarrhea. Mm-hmm. The other way around, chronic constipation. So people who push downwards a lot.
Putting pressure on those muscles.
Yeah, that can also, in the end, cause some form of prolapse.
I just want to say that if anybody listening has questions, if you've been there yourself, if you are going through it yourself and want to share a comment on what it's been like or ask a question about your options, you are very welcome to do so, either by calling in on 021-446-0567 or by sending us a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. Gynecologist Dr. Katrine Dahak with us in studio. You normally have to go to Vincent Pilotti and make an appointment to see her, so take the opportunity to call in and ask the question today. Free of charge. So we've spoken about what might cause it to happen, and you've referenced menopause as being one of the factors. Does that mean that the age of onset would typically be after menopause, or can it happen sooner?
Oh, it can absolutely happen sooner, but it's typically after the menopause. I mean, we see people as young as in their 20s presenting with prolapse, but then it's more a genetic type of thing. But yeah, menopause is... menopause and lots of children and heavy children being pushed out. So, the conversation about should one do cesarean sections often comes up.
With bigger babies in particular, I would imagine. Yeah. Yes. So let's talk about what you can do. I know in the olden days, some women would seek a complete hysterectomy as basically the only solution. We have better options and other options on the table now. Where would you like to start? If somebody comes to you presenting with this, you've already said it depends how much they're being impacted will impact what you do about it. But what are the options?
So, firstly, if somebody comes and they don't complain about prolapse, and you examine the patient and there is some prolapse, you don't have to do much because it doesn't bother the patient. But I mean, I've had this situation where somebody came for a checkup, an older woman, very shy, etc., and she came and her whole uterus was hanging out and was ulcerating, and she was walking around like that, too shy in the end to come and see someone.
Sure.
But in terms of treatment, you know, the treatment is not really hysterectomy in general, because it's not always the uterus that prolapses.
Yeah.
Right. So it's either the vaginal walls or also then the uterus with that. But it's not always, so hysterectomy is not really the way to go just for a prolapse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a lot of other options, including mesh, and I want to specifically talk about mesh because I know there's been a lot of controversy around certain types of mesh, and we've known and heard about class action lawsuits. One option is to use a mesh to sort of offer support to hold the organs in place. Can you tell us a bit more?
Yes, I can. So we are not allowed to use meshes anymore for primary prolapse. And that came from years ago. I don't remember which year it was. I mean, most probably you've got it written down. But the FDA then actually banned all use of meshes for primary prolapses. The reason for that is that these meshes were put underneath scars. Obviously, because we make an incision, put the mesh underneath, close the scar, and about up to 10% of those meshes started crawling out. So what happens now is these meshes are enmeshed with the tissue.
Yeah.
It crawls out, and the patient has a chronic, foul-smelling, bloody discharge, and we cannot remove the mesh because it's now sort of knitted in with the tissues. So that was a total no-no. But there are two situations where we can use meshes, and that is if we do not... make incisions in the vagina. So that sounds funny, to not make an incision in the vagina to do prolapse surgery, but you can do prolapse surgery now through the laparoscope. In other words, you go through the belly button, and you can actually say somebody's had a hysterectomy and the top of the vagina and the front and back of the vagina is prolapsing. You can actually put a mesh onto the top of the vagina, pull that up, and what do you call those things? Tack it onto the sacrum.
Good heavens.
All right, so that's Gore-Tex. It gets stitched onto the vagina, top of the vagina, pulled up. And so actually you have no scars into the vagina, and the mesh is inside. So that mesh won't crawl out.
Okay.
And the other place where we use still a little bit of mesh is when we do what we call a transvaginal tape, or transvaginal tape, obturator tape or whatever. And we use a tiny little bit of mesh and the rest is nylon to hang like a hammock mm-hmm. underneath the angle of the urethra and the bladder. That's for people who have what we call bladder stress incontinence. Incontinence. So there we still use a little bit of mesh.
It's fascinating how medical science marches on. And, you know, listeners may recall there was a big carte blanche segment on the lawsuits around the mesh and those women who'd been left with such terrible side effects of its use a couple of years ago. We covered it on the show at the time. So really amazing to hear how things move on and you find better ways of doing things. So if somebody comes to you today and it is bothering them, okay, you've mentioned the few times that mesh would be used. If that's not usable, what are the other options, Katrin?
Oh, the way we treat it is actually with the patient's own fascia and tissue. So say, for instance, there is a prolapse of the bladder. One opens the vaginal wall and then you actually find the fascia, which is torn, mm-hmm. to the side underneath the vaginal wall. So what we do then is, you know, I'm better on TV because I use my hands. But so what we do then is that we actually stitch both the sides of the fascia together again, and that actually causes a lifting of the organ that is prolapsing underneath the vagina, and then we close the vagina over that again. So we actually do not need a mesh. We use the patient's own tissue to support. Yeah.
Dr. Katrin de Haak with us in studio, gynecologist specializing in vulvovaginal diseases. If you've got questions around pelvic organ prolapse, today is the day to ask them. And I can see several comments and questions coming through, including some talking about prevention, which is definitely part of the conversation. But first, a few of the earlier questions. Please, would you ask your guest if, other than the symptoms you've described, a specific examination is needed to diagnose, or would going in for your general pap smear appointment with your gynae be the place where it would likely be identified?
Well, as I actually said a little bit earlier, yes, one can diagnose it on a routine examination when somebody comes, and mm-hmm. You will see that people have lax. I would call that lax vaginal walls. That is not really prolapse. Prolapse is something that actually worries the patient. Mm. I would never go and say, oh, whoa, you've got very lax posterior and anterior vaginal wall, you need surgery. No, no, no. We do not do surgery unless it worries the patient. And that's very important, because that's not how it is practiced always.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's such an important point. So if, you know, I can see a lot of women messaging in with anxiety about how, well, what if I don't know I've got it? If you don't, if it's not bothering you, it's not something that
absolutely
needs intervention.
Absolutely.
Is what I'm hearing loud and clear. Thank you. Somebody saying, I had a hysterectomy at a young age and assume I have a prolapsed bladder. Would that require surgery to correct it? Look, as always, you would need to consult your own medical professional to check that. But would you like to respond in general?
So just to be very clear about this. People have this conception that if you have a hysterectomy, you're going to land up with prolapse. That is not so, because when we do a hysterectomy, actually the ligaments that hold the cervix in place still are in place, and we actually stitch those to the vaginal wall. So a hysterectomy does not necessarily lead to prolapse. But yes, if people have a tendency for prolapse, the top of the vagina can prolapse and the anterior vaginal wall. But as said before, if this person goes and sees a gynecologist and has no problems whatsoever, then even if I see that there is a little bit of bladder coming down and I ask the patient, does this bother you? And the person says no, then that's it. Nothing needs to be done.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Exactly.
Of course, fixing it can actually also cause problems.
Yeah. Well, also just to make the point, and I'm so glad somebody has sent this message, you've mentioned that the natural childbirth process, and particularly of bigger babies, can be one of the factors that can lead to this. But here's a message from someone saying, my mum gave birth 11 times and she never had any problems at all. It was amazing to me. So I think important to say as well, it doesn't mean that natural childbirth will lead to prolapse.
No, absolutely not. I mean, as I said, genetic is a problem. And also, you know, know what? It also depends on, you know, that person who gave birth to 11 children. Maybe that person walked to the shop 5 kilometers there and back, etc., etc. It also depends on your core muscles, on your amount of exercise, on your, I mean, people won't do necessarily Kegel exercises on their own, whatever, but we can talk about a bit of prevention.
That's exactly one of the questions that has just come through. Several people asking, is there anything we can do to prevent this? And one of them specifically referenced Kegel exercises. Rosalind asking, do Kegel exercises or planks in yoga help or any other exercise?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it actually needs to be more widely talked about, is that while the estrogen is still there, in other words, while you're young and after you've given birth to a few children or not, to actually keep that core. Yeah, the core. Everyone knows what the core is because every second person does Pilates. But also the contraction of the vagina. That's not easy exercise, by the way. Mm-hmm. Those are squeezing exercises. You don't necessarily have to do put anything in the vagina, but there are all sorts of Kegel things available on Takealot. Yeah. Not advertising Takealot necessary. But you can also use like a little golf ball. You have to clean it before you use it. But that way you can actually feel how you're squeezing against something. And if you do that, and if you know what muscles to squeeze, do that. You can do it everywhere. I mean, I can do it sitting here. I can do it standing in the queue in Pick and Pay or whatever.
Sitting in the traffic,
Sitting in the traffic. Actually just do your contraction of your around the vagina muscles, not necessarily the lower abdomen. And that is definitely preventative, no question about it.
And you say particularly important to do that before the onset of menopause.
Yeah, while you have estrogen, because once you lose your estrogen, it's very difficult for those tissues to regenerate.
Do you think doctors are doing enough to conscientize women about this, particularly after childbirth?
No. Not at all.
Well, there we go. You heard it on Cape Talk from the horse's mouth. Please get stuck into the exercises. Roz writing in to say thank you for this great discussion on this important topic. It's very enlightening. Open talk is really needed to alert women to the condition, what to look out for, and the possible treatments. I really love the description of the umbrella turning inside out. Roz, thank you for that. Also, a compliment for you from Widad. Lovely message here. She says, as a female pharmacist, I'm often approached with questions by women who have these symptoms. I feel so much better equipped to ask the right questions so that they can be referred to get the help needed. Thank you for this very insightful conversation. Widad, thank you very much for that. So a follow-up from the person whose mom gave birth 11 times, confirming indeed mom was very athletic, never owned or drove a car. She walked many miles. It would have been her birthday, 100th birthday on the 2nd of April. Thank you for that follow-up. So that really underlines what you said, the importance of core muscle strength. And the sooner you can get that embedded and part of your habits, the better the long-term implications. Katrina, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about this condition or treatment options or where to go for help or anything I should have asked you that you think is important to share?
Talking about prevention, yes, we talked about the exercise. But then once one goes into the menopause, I think, you know, people are so scared of hormone replacement therapy. Number one, one doesn't have to be scared of hormone replacement therapy. Estrogen is an incredibly helpful drug for a lot of things. By the way, it doesn't work for Alzheimer's, but it's for our bone health, heart health, but also for our sexual well-being, because it keeps the vagina, you know, velvety, and also it helps with preventing prolapse. So one needs to also think about that when we talk, have the general talk about hormone replacement therapy.
Thank you very much for that. Okay. I think we have tackled all of the questions that have come in on our WhatsApp line. Thank you very much to those who have joined the conversation and asked a question. Last thing to say then, Katrine, if somebody listening to this is going, nodding their head, like, I think I am struggling with some of those symptoms and I do want help, can they go directly to their usual gynecologist or do they need to find a specialist gynecologist of some sort?
No, there are some people who are more likely to do vaginal surgery or not, but you know, in Cape Town we're very lucky in that when we have people who are not very sort of comfortable with doing that, like for instance they do more obstetrics than that, then they actually will refer or ask somebody to help. So, but yes, to find out who is a gynecologist who does a lot of that work, or go to their own gynecologist. People won't tackle in general in Cape Town, I'm saying Cape Town all the time, that they're not comfortable with. And so it's not a very difficult surgery. It's, you know, the more you do, the better you get.
Yeah.
And so, to the gynecologist, yeah.
And let's just loop back to where we started. The symptoms that should not be ignored that might be an indication that you have prolapse. Just run those through those for us again.
The usual symptoms of prolapse when people come and say, I stood in the shower and suddenly I felt this thing that felt like an egg in between the labia. So that is a typical, very typical thing that people come with, and that's prolapse, whether it's anterior wall, posterior wall. But stress incontinence, coughing, laughing, you know, anything that causes stress on the abdomen and actually losing some urine, that's a form of prolapse. That's the prolapse just underneath the urethra vesicle, the urethra bladder angle. And the other one that people don't necessarily know is that if they have to support their perineum or even put the finger a little bit in the vagina to push the back wall of the vagina down to be able to pass stool. That is the prolapse. That's called the rectocele. That's very low down. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily show through the vagina, but that's the symptom that they present with.
So if you've been experiencing any of those, the big takeaway message today is you don't have to just live with it or accept that this is a natural part of aging. Yeah. You can go and ask for help if it is bothering you, and your gynecologist, the first port of call. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Dr. Katrien de Haak, gynecologist specializing in vulvovaginal diseases. As always, learned so much. Really appreciate the straight talking answers. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Pippa. It's been lovely being here.
And thank you to our listener, Roz, for suggesting the conversation. Really an excellent suggestion. Well received.